look at the news near your neighborhood. The Fairfield University Graduate and Professional Studies around the region. Now on Melissa in the Morning, WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
We are heading down south to Florida for news around the region where investigators recovered the flight recorders from the Amazon cargo plane that crashed at Miami International Airport. Five people were killed and five others were seriously hurt when the Boeing 767 overshot the runway Sunday, hitting two vehicles on the ground. The NTSB says it's too early to determine what caused that crash. But joining us now to get more perspective on this is retired commercial airline pilot Paul Zielinski. Paul, welcome back. After watching some of the footage, it's been a couple of days. What are some of the key takeaways for you?
Oh, good morning, Melissa. It appears to me that it was a pilot error incident. The airplane landed long. They weren't stabilized. The FAA has very specific rules and parameters to meet a stabilized approach criteria, being on speed, touching down in the touchdown zone, being configured, things like that. And it seems like the crew, you know, I hate to talk ill of people, and we don't know exactly what happened, but it appears that the crew, you know, violated some of the stabilized approach criteria, resulting in them landing long and overrunning the end of the runway.
So, again, I know that this is from, you know, again, a perspective from somebody who has been flying for decades, but this kind of at least shows potential, would you say, not enough experience? Would you say not knowing that airport well enough, that runway well enough, or, you know, not knowing the rules? Like, I'm trying, and again, I know that nothing is confirmed, and I don't mean to put you in this space, Paul, but when you watch that video and you see that this is clearly, you know, I don't know if you call it a miscommunication. I don't know if this is just not having enough training. But to me, there's like nothing that goes right in this video when you're watching what happened.
Well, it's hard to say. That I believe the captain was 55 years old, and he is a captain of a 767. So I have to think that he has experience. And the first officer was 35, and I don't know what his experience level was. One of the big factors that they'll discuss and you'll learn more about later, it was what the weather was doing. If you look at the airplane on approach, they have a video of that. It's very, very dark to the east and to the south, and that is probably a factor in the accident. The winds were gusting. As thunderstorms build, you know, the wind goes one way, it gets sucked up into the thunderstorms, and then as they dissipate, the winds change and the winds come out of the thunderstorm. There was a slight tailwind, and as a result, the airplane was going faster when it touched down. So adding to it being a long touchdown, not in the touchdown zone, they may have had tailwind, which, you know, if you think about kinetic energy, it's a function of airspeed. And airspeed, it's a square, not to get too nerdy on you, but having high airspeed is really bad when you're coming into land. It's very, very difficult to dissipate that with the brakes. And like I said, if you're landing long and you're landing fast, and it just sets you up for disaster.
I mean, how much time, Paul, would pilots have to react in a situation like this?
He had all the way until he touched down to decide whether or not he should go around. And maybe the weather was so bad that he was thinking to himself, I really don't want to go back into that weather because it was just so nasty, and I want to put this airplane down on the ground and you know, call it a day. I don't know what was going through his mind, but it was apparent that he wasn't going to touch down in the touchdown zone, which is the first 3,000 feet of that runway. And once you pass that 3,000-foot point on the runway, which is very clearly marked, and you haven't touched down, it's time to go around. And he just chose to continue to attempt to land.
So, as mentioned before, investigators have recovered the flight recorders. What information, Paul, could those recorders provide?
They'll provide everything. They'll provide altitude. They'll provide speed. The voice recorders will record things that were said in the cockpit, air traffic control, anything that you can think that would be worth recording will be recorded. In my job at my airlines, they record everything and they download that information. Even if it doesn't result in an accident, at my airline, they record everything you've done in a particular flight. They know where you're going. They know where you touched down. They know the speed. They know when you got configured. And they collate all this stuff. And if they see that you have violated the rules, they'll come and talk to you about it. I don't know. And so that kind of keeps you honest because you know someone's always looking at you. Not that you need that. You always want to be safe. But if you push the envelope a little bit, it keeps you honest and you do things by the book because down the line someone's going to talk to you about it. I don't know if they had this system in place at their airline. It's pretty sophisticated, and I know all the major airlines have this.
And again, Paul Zielinski is a retired airline commercial pilot. And when we're talking about this case out of Miami International Airport, the plane, as you mentioned, Paul, was a Boeing 767. Now, as you're talking about getting nerdy, I'm going to get nerdy for a second here. What can you tell us about Boeing aircraft as far as takeoff, emergency situations? How does it do in wild weather? I mean, we've seen situations of planes overshooting the runway or coming off the runway. I think there was a case you and I talked about maybe a year or so ago in Canada. Remember when there was that awful storm? It was trying to land in the snow, and somehow, some way, they were able. Flipped over. Right. So, how do these aircrafts, the Boeings, how do they do in emergency situations, and certainly when you're factoring in weather?
Well, I probably have most of my airline time and most of my flying time in Boeing 767s, just like this one. It was a great airplane. It's very well built. Boeing is a known product. I don't know the condition of the airplane. It was, they're old. They're, you know, 30 up to 30 years old, maybe even older. But as long as they're maintained properly, there shouldn't be any problems. They're very solid airplanes. They're very reliable airplanes. They have redundant systems. I have no problem with the Boeing. In this situation, it appears that it had nothing to do with the airplane. But you know, maybe they'll come out and say there was a mechanical problem. But from just what I see on the videos, it just looks like a pilot error, not the airplane problem.
We are chatting with retired commercial airline pilot Paul Zielinski from right here in Connecticut, getting perspective on a deadly plane collision that took place at Miami International Airport. Investigators have since recovered the flight recorders from that Amazon cargo plane that touched down and hit a couple of vehicles. Five people ultimately were killed, five others seriously hurt when that Boeing 767 overshot the runway on Sunday. What kinds of maintenance or mechanical issues, Paul, would investigators be looking at this point? I know you had mentioned that it seems like from your professional standpoint, this looks more like pilot error, but what could have possibly been either a maintenance or a mechanical issue that is linked to this crash?
Well, an interesting thing that people point out when you see the videos is the spoilers. Those are the things that are on the wings that come up when you land, and it spoils the lift, and it allows all the weight of the airplane to be put on the ground, which makes the brakes more effective. The spoilers didn't look like they deployed, and it could have been a function of they didn't touch down firm enough. You know, the airplane senses with a squat switch that it's on the ground, the spoilers come up. They may have floated and put it down too gently to allow the spoilers to deploy. The spoilers may have malfunctioned. They may have been deferred because of maintenance reasons. The automatic spoilers, when you arm them and you touch down, they automatically come up. But if they don't automatically come up, you manually raise them, and it didn't appear that the spoilers were deployed at all. So they'll look at everything. They'll have all that information from the flight data recorders, all the mechanical things, everything, and they'll put the airplane back together. And this airplane was pretty much intact, other than the fire. So they'll be able to determine pretty quickly whether it was a maintenance issue or not.
How much, Paul, can pilots rely on cockpit warnings or alarms, something like that, when there's something clearly going wrong?
Well, those bring our attention to the problems, but if you're paying attention, you know, the warnings are just a supplement to you monitoring your instruments, and you're constantly looking and scanning and looking for problems. And like I said, sometimes the warnings will bring your attention to something, and sometimes you see it even before the warning occurs. So yeah, we do depend on it, but it shouldn't. You know, your life shouldn't depend on a horn going off when something goes wrong.
How dangerous, this is probably a silly question, but I have to ask it, kind of how dangerous or what is the risk when an aircraft leaves the runway and encounters vehicles or obstacles on the ground? I mean, in this situation, I don't know, you know, how much warning is even enough warning to have gotten cars out of the way, because it just seemed like when you watch this video, something was going to get hit. Because things were not working according to plan.
They left the runway at, they say, over 100 miles an hour. And, you know, and the one thing I want to talk about is the overrun area where the at the end of the runway before it got to the parking lot. That was only 1,000 feet. It was 1,500 feet. So you can imagine going 100 miles an hour, how long it would take you to move that distance, and it wouldn't take you very long at all. There's a system at some airports that don't have a lot of runway and a lot of safety zone at the end of the runway. They put a system called Engineering Materials Arresting System, EMAS. And what it is when an airplane overruns the end of the runway and before it gets to the parking lot or the road or whatever, there's a material that crushes that will stop the airplane. And I don't know if you've been out west and you've seen these turnoffs where semi-trailers that lose their brakes can turn off and drive up a ramp, and the ramp is full of sand, and it stops the truck from running away when it's going downhill. Mm. It's the same type of system is used at only 70 airports. The FAA has determined that if it has at least 1,000 feet after the end of the runway as a safety zone, you don't need this EMAS. But obviously, if you're going fast enough, the 1,000 feet means nothing like it did in this situation. So I think you're going to see them have a big push to install this EMAS system in at more airports.
So they only have that at 70 airports right now, Paul? Is that what I heard you say?
Yeah. It's at airports where it's really critical. There's not enough room at the end of the runway. If you've ever been to Midway Airport in Chicago, you know, it's crazy. It's in the middle of the city. And at the end of the runway, there's gas stations, there's roads, it's amazing. The airport was designed for traffic in the 1940s, wow. Airline traffic in the 1940s, and you're flying jets in there now, and it's a crazy place to fly into. Mm-hmm. And so that will have that EMAS at the end of the runway to prevent an airplane from landing long and going into the street at the end of the runway.
I kind of wish, and I'm probably talking out of turn here, so I mean no disrespect. I've been on this plane many, many times before, and I've landed here many, many times before because of convenience. I wish they'd put that in New Haven at Tweed. I don't know if you've been on any of those flights, Paul, but man, we always say we feel like Buzz Lightyear to infinity and beyond. Those planes are going so fast, and that runway is so short, and I always sit there and I pray, whew, do I pray hard, my guy, that we just can stop in time, and it's okay. And I know people probably are saying, well, then don't go there. But again, I think that their crews are really great and they're efficient, and I've had no issues. There's never been an issue since Avelo has come over to there. I think about those shorter runways, and it's not like these planes aren't big. I mean, certainly they're not the ones that are, you know, international where they've got, you know, eight seats or more across. But they're still pretty big planes. And when they're landing in New Haven, I think to myself, man, whew, I do not want to go through the fence. I do not want to go through a neighborhood. I mean, it kind of to your point, nowhere near the scale of Chicago. But that's interesting. And I wish they would install those like everywhere. I don't know. I'm sure that cost comes down to everything. But to me, that's just another safety precaution, especially in today's world where everybody is so nervous to fly. We need it, but we're afraid to do it.
Well, that's a good point, and I'm not sure. I don't think that they have that.
I don't think they do either. What you're describing to me, I've never seen in New Haven, at least.
You wouldn't notice it.
I wouldn't?
No. It looks just like the overrun, looks like the end of the runway. It's kind of a different gray color, and when you go by it, you can, if you know what you're looking for, you can tell, oh, that's EMAS.
Okay. Then I don't know. They may have it. I don't know. I don't know if they do.
Yeah, that's a good question. I wish I had looked that up. When you're landing at a runway that's short, like LaGuardia, like New Haven, The crew is hyper aware that it's a short runway, and they're prepared. I always said, and my worst landings were on a long runway, clear skies, light winds, sun is out. When you kind of let your guard down a little bit, when it comes to landing on a very challenging runway, the pilots get hyper-focused. They make sure they don't land long. They make sure they're on speed. They make sure they're configured. They get right on the brakes. So it sounds counterintuitive, but the more challenging the runway is, the better, at least my landings tended to be, if that makes any sense.
It does. No, it certainly does. And I think, Paul, I always love to end these conversations with you, which, by the way, Paul Zielinski, again, is a longtime pilot, not just the commercial airline industry, but also in the military. So I always appreciate he's retired now, and I bother him all the time because I think whenever these cases
no
come
bother.
Up, I think you have such a wealth of knowledge on this, Paul, and I love that you're always willing to talk about it. But, you know, I always love to end our interviews with being real, which is that, look, the news is scary, and we always highlight when things go wrong, but we don't always highlight when things are going well. What would be sort of your, you know, an important thought for people to understand and to think about when it comes to when you see these cases, which again, this one was very scary, and could it be pilot error? Maybe. But what do you want people to think about when it comes to trusting air travel?
Well, airline crashes make great news stories, and it doesn't matter how serious the crash was or how minor the crash was. If there's an airplane crash and they have video, it's going to be the lead story on the news all the time. You're going to see it on the internet. It gets people to watch. It's like in the old days, they used to say, you know, you always led with a fire on the news because you've got the flames and people like to look at that. And it's flying is super, super safe. I know that it may not feel that way because these stories come out and there's some, I'm going to say, you know, sensationalized a little bit, but it gets you to watch their news program. It gets you to listen to the ads and help them sell things. So you got to take everything you see in the media with a grain of salt. It's very, very safe to fly. It's the safest way to travel by far.
Paul Zielinski, I always appreciate having these conversations. Thank you again so much for your perspective and insight. And certainly as far as this latest case is concerned out of Miami International Airport. When we get more information, we will share it with you here on WICC. Thanks, Paul.